150 years ago, Boise's founders probably never imagined the town one day would be ranked among the best in the country. But today, Idaho's capital city continues to rank on best of lists. Well, good evening. I'm Sadie Babbitts. Thanks for being with us for this community conversation. Throughout the year, we're hosting these forums centered around issues and ideas that you, our audience, is talking about. And tonight, we're talking about Boise as it celebrates its 150th birthday. Boise has been placed among the best U.S. downtowns for its small-town charm and hip urban factor. It's been named the best city to raise a family, the healthiest, the best place to retire, and the list keeps going on. There are plenty of reasons why people stay in Idaho's most populous city and why those who visit sometimes leave only to find themselves wanting to come back. Sunshine, the outdoors, there's lots to see and do, but there are other factors that push people to leave Boise, including higher paying jobs. Well, we have three guests with us tonight to help guide our conversation. We have Yap Voss. He moved to Boise last year from Southern Florida to join the faculty of Boise State's Department of Community and Regional Planning. Barbara Perry Bauer is the president of TAG Historical Research and Consulting in Boise. It's a private company that she owns with her sister Elizabeth Jaycox. Together they do historical research for federal, state, and local government agencies, including right here in the city of Boise. And Marianne Jordan is the president of the Boise City Council. She moved to the city nearly 20 years ago, and she says she's been involved in her community pretty much since the day she got here. So tonight, Marianne, let's start with you. What made you decide to move to Boise all those years ago?
Well, it was my husband's work that brought us to Boise. He was in manufacturing and was recruited to run a plant in Caldwell. And in our search for a place to live, we found Boise, and that was the spot. But Boise being Boise is what kept us here. We had been transferred around the country pretty frequently, and we just fell in love with this place and decided this is where we were going to stay. Bought a business, blinked, and 20 years went by. So here we are.
Well, what has been one of the biggest changes that you have seen over the years?
You know, it's an interesting, when you do this stuff long enough, you start to make some observations about periods of time and how things have changed. And we can point to a lot of growth and the increase in population throughout the entire valley. But for me, I think what's really evolved, not so much changed, but evolved, is Boise's ability to really identify what is right for the community and to make it happen, to stand up for it in the face of adversity, whether it's political or economic or whatever it might be, and also to determine our path in terms of development. Early on, when growth was really raging, there was a mindset among some that said that if people want to come here and invest, we should let them invest and build however they want to build. Mm-hmm. And this community fought back on that and said, no, if you're going to invest in this community, you're going to invest properly, and we're going to make it happen in a way that is really functional for Boise. And so I think we've kind of empowered ourselves more in that way as a community, and it's been a good thing.
Now, Barbara, you have lived in Boise for a long time as well. I believe you said 1988 is when you moved back here?
Yep, that is correct. I actually grew up over in eastern Idaho, and my family ended up coming over here, my father and my mother and two of my sisters. And so, lo and behold, I dropped out of college for a little bit, and when it was time to go home to nest, I came to Boise. And fortunately, I was gone for a little bit living in Wyoming, but my husband actually got a job here in 1988, and that brought us back to Boise, and I really don't want to go anywhere else.
And Yap, you're a very new resident to Boise. You moved here last year. You haven't even been here for a year, right?
It's almost a year. I can't believe it, though. That year has gone by really quickly, and I still remember when I came here a year ago and I was staying at the Grove Hotel trying to figure out where I was going to live, and it worked out all really well. But the reason I came here was, first of all, a displeasure with where I was. I had been in Florida for 17 years, I got, in October, November, I got to a point where I was driving 400, 500 miles a week just to go to work. You know, and to go to meetings and sitting in that car and then having a car that the radiator overheated. It kind of got old. And then, you know, I had a two-year-old at the time, and it was not the best place to raise a kid. And so we started looking around a little bit. And I have to tell you, they had to really recruit me to come to Boise. You know, when I saw a job in Boise, it wasn't the first thing that came to mind. That's where I want to go from South Florida. But it has been a good decision. It's been very interesting. It's been a great place. And I am very sad to say that on Monday, for the fourth time since I've been here, I had to drive to work. but other than that, I'm always biking to work. And now the irony was that it was for a pedestrian bike workshop that I had to go to.
So that is irony.
That was irony, yeah.
Well, what is your take of the city since you've been here for less than a year?
So I'm going to compare it again with South Florida because I've been thinking about this for a while. And I'm like, is this the honeymoon phase that I like this place so much? You know, why is this place so special to me in such a short period of time? And then I started thinking about what was it in South Florida that I missed that I have here? And I think one of the most important things is, well, first of all, that the people actually seem to care. You know, it's just very different from South Florida where it doesn't seem like anybody cares about anything anymore. It's just a place where people are because there is sun, but they don't care about the place. But the other thing is that it seems to me that Boise, it's really a small town, right? But for a small town, it has a tremendous amount of amenities and tremendous amount of different things to do, and there is a certain rhythm to it. You know, and being from Florida where you have wet season and dry season, and some people say you have the hot season and the really hot season, but here, there's a rhythm. You look forward to Bogus Basin opening. You know, you look forward to people floating down the river. You're looking forward to a parade. You're looking forward to things. There is a certain flow to the city that I haven't found in Florida. And I think that's really important. That's really what's appealing to me. I can look forward to the next event. My daughter is already looking forward to the hot air balloons. You know, so this rhythm, I think, is something that I really find here and that I find really appealing.
And Marianne, you're nodding your head. You agree with this idea that there's a rhythm to the city?
I love the way he said that. Mm-hmm. I just think that's really a great definition of what it is. We all feel like it's a special place, and sometimes it's hard to articulate why we feel that way or to explain it to someone, and we can sound a little bit nutty. Well, it's just mm-hmm. wonderful, and we love it, and if you come here, you'll understand that. But rhythm is such a great description mm-hmm. of what it is, and we do look forward, and we do participate in the same things and grow events and do them together as a community. So,
Barbara, you're a historian. Mm-hmm. Has that rhythm always been in Boise, especially in those early days when the town was just getting platted and it was 10 blocks and a very different place from what it is today? Do you think there was that rhythm?
I think that rhythm probably came along as the city grew. And it's really interesting. Tonight, we're actually right across the street from one of the oldest houses in Boise, the Cy Jacobs Ubaraga House. And the street that we're on, Grove Street, is one of those original platted Boise streets. It was originally called Market Street. So we're actually in the center of what was really sort of the bustling part of Boise, you know, in 1863 when things really started. And it's hard to really, as a historian, you don't want to assume and you don't want to place ideas on people that you really don't know. But you have to think that because we're here 150 years later, that rhythm, that sense of community, it had to be planted and it had to grow. And I really do believe that did come from those early folks.
Do you ever imagine what those early days were like? You know, if you were to walk through those 10 blocks, what it would have been like?
I do. And, you know, it's very interesting to me because, of course, we are known as the city of the trees. And you have to think about the fact that originally when the Native American people, of course, were here, but we were on the Oregon Trail, and people actually passed through this area going to greener pastures, and they came back. We were settled from the west to the east when mining was discovered in the 1860s. So we're a little bit different than many communities, and it wasn't quite the oasis that we have and see today. It was considered by some to be very green and lush and wonderful because of the cottonwoods along the river. But actually, when you look at some of those early photographs, this was all sort of that arid desert landscape. So I do imagine the 108-degree heat that we had last week. I imagine myself having to do a lot of manual labor in a long, heavy dress. You know, it's just thinking about all of those difficulties makes you admire the folks who did stay here and built this community.
It was really the gold fever that started the town then.
It was.
Discovery of gold.
It was the discovery of the gold in the area and the fact that we were at the crossroads of the Oregon Trail and those mines to Boise Basin. And, of course, we had Pinckney Luginbiel who brought and settled the Fort Boise to protect the folks that were coming to the Boise area. So actually the fort and the city sort of went hand in hand. And a lot of the folks that came did come from Walla Walla, because Luke and Beale came from Walla Walla as well. So again, we have that really interesting west to east settlement pattern.
When did the city really start to take off? And what was that that really pushed it forward?
Well, for many years, of course, we had the growth occurred really in the around 1890. For many years, I think Boise did remain fairly limited as far as population. Because of our topography, the things that we love that make Boise so beautiful and unique, the foothills around us, the river that flows below, all of those actually made for a very difficult location to get to. Rail transportation, which was really taking off, of course, in the 1860s, bypassed Boise, so folks still had to come here by freight wagon. The city fathers worked for many, many years to get direct passenger service. We did get a rail line in the 1880s, but it was a stub line, so you were not getting people coming here directly on the rail. But by 1890, at that point, several things were going on. Irrigation was occurring. The mining boom was still around. Idaho went from being a territory to a state, and Boise, of course, with the seat of government. So all of those things combined to bring people here and kind of cause a boom. And, of course, there were other factors as well. Like today, you have folks, entrepreneurs and developers. It's cyclical. You had folks that were coming in from other places and looking at the possibilities of the community here and staying and help building that community. And a lot of that happened in the 1890s.
Now, Marianne, you have seen Boise physically change. More people come in, more construction. It's changed tremendously. You told me once that the city has grown emotionally. How so?
When you've lived in other places, and I've traveled around the country and lived in a whole lot of other communities, there is an assumption that there are people who are running the community and people who are not. And I don't see that here in Boise. I see a community that functions together. You have, of course, elected officials. You have a structure in place. But you have a community that comes together and works on issues, projects, initiatives, whatever they might be. And I also think that, we've had a lot of struggles in the city of Boise with regard to the tools that we feel like we might need as a city to grow socially and grow economically, and any authority that we have, we derive from the state, and that's always been a bit of a struggle. And we've come to a place where we've taken it on our own to do what we've needed to do to build the community we feel we need to build. We haven't waited for the state to make those steps. We've made them on our own and said, this is important for Boise, and we're going to push forward.
But it sounds like there's a tension there.
There can be. This is the largest city in the state, and I'm sure that the perception on the part of some people in rural areas might be that too much attention is paid to the largest city in the state. We view this very much as a benefit to the entire state. It's the economic engine. Sales tax revenues are shared with cities across the state, and so if Boise's doing well, so are other cities. And it's very important to us that we maintain the quality of life that we have here.
When you talk about people coming together to form a community, and we have an opera and ballet and so many other cultural and resources here, do you think that comes from the isolated nature of Boise? I mean, we're kind of, we're in the middle. But, here's Portland over here, and here's Salt Lake City over here, and Boise's right in the middle. Do you think that comes from being isolated?
I think that's a big part of it. A lot of other cities you can drive, half hour, 45 minutes, be in another town that might have those offerings, and we are the kind of center of it here. And so to travel to Salt Lake or to Portland or Seattle for entertainment, for cultural experience, is both complicated and a little bit inauthentic, because it isn't something that is community grown and based. And so I think that's been a real driver for us.
One of the things that coming from Florida that I really noticed here is that I have that same feeling that there's more cooperation. People might not always agree with each other, but ultimately it's about the community. In Florida, that doesn't exist. In Florida, it's always, watch your back. Somebody else might do it before you, and I've seen that many times there. And here, that doesn't seem to exist. That same. And I think that's a tremendous asset. And I think maybe that comes out of the isolation. I'm not sure. In Florida, we saw it when there was a hurricane. Right? When there was a hurricane, there was no more power. All of a sudden, that community came together, and it was a it's really weird sounding, it became a fun place to live. Because all of a sudden the community came together around some kind of disaster. And here it seems that that structure is there, and to me that's a really positive force that is a tremendous asset that I don't think we always use as much as we should.
Well, how does that play into the future of the city? Can it play to our advantage, this isolation or more remoteness?
I think so. You know, I think because it's so isolated to a certain extent, you know, I came from the most connected mega region to the most isolated region, I think. And I think because of that, you have that community structure, you have organizations that actually work together, people know each other, which is really interesting. In Florida, I would never talk with a director somewhere. Here, we do it all the time. You know, those connections are all really short. That's a tremendous asset to the future. I think there are some threats, you know. And I was looking around before this meeting, and I'm like, you know, how are we similar to Seattle, Portland, or Salt Lake, and all those kind of places? And I realized, I don't know how many people like Salt Lake City.
Oh, I do.
Right. Yeah, so I realized,
to
me, Sugar House District, I love.
Well, so to me, I was looking at Salt Lake City actually has less people than Boise has, which surprised me. You know, I always thought about Salt Lake City as a major city, much bigger than Boise was, but the reality is Salt Lake City proper only has 190,000 people, while we have a little over 200. But then the metropolitan statistical area, the whole area around it, has another 2 million or 1.5 million, I'm not exactly sure. And I think that's the thing you need to look at. You know, do you want Boise to become that, you know, a small town that is still sitting there with these large suburban regions around it, or do you want to somehow try to make sure that that doesn't happen the same way? And I think that's really what the challenge is, and I think as a community you need to come together and figure that out. We can look at Salt Lake and say they have a wonderful transportation system and they do all these other things really well, but ultimately it's a relatively small downtown, although it looks really big, with a large metropolitan area around it with all the transportation and congestion problems and issues that you deal with. Much more big box stores and stuff, yeah.
I actually want to talk a little bit about isolation, because I really don't believe that we're isolated today. In my mind, I don't feel that anymore. Perhaps it was true in the past, but I guess, you know, there are different types of isolation. And, you know, as far as transportation, yeah, it's difficult to fly here and you can't take a train here, but you can certainly drive here fairly quickly from some of those larger areas now. But I also think that a lot of us take pride in the fact that people think we're an isolated community, and we kind of want to hang on to that because it makes us special and helps keep our identity. But I don't know anymore that I agree that we're really that isolated in when I think of isolation and what that might mean. I don't know if anyone else has an opinion about that.
I agree with you up to the part about flying, and then it becomes a complicating factor because from a business standpoint, that's one of the difficulties that we do have, and I think we'll probably get to some economics in just a little while, but that's been one of the true challenges that we've faced is getting better and easier air access here for businesses.
You're listening to KBSX 91.5. I'm Sadie Babbitts. We are talking about Idaho's capital city as it turns 150 years old this year. Boise's gone from a gold rush town to become the largest city in Idaho. What could the city's future hold? Well, our guests are Mary Ann Jordan, Boise City Council President, historian Barbara Perry Bauer, and Jaap Voss. He's a professor at Boise State in the Community and Regional Planning Program. By 2040, Boise is expected to grow to, I think, around 340,000 people, something like that. And Boise proper right now has about 210,000 people. So when we look at growth and what a city needs to accommodate that growth, infrastructure, roads, transit, walkability, what does the city need? Mary Ann? She seems like a natural choice.
It's a long list. There's the obvious answers. We need good infill housing. We need housing that people can live and work near or in downtown. We need a lot more work done on public transportation. Cities need the authority to be able to go to the voters for local option to have a dedicated funding source for transportation. Right now, our transportation system is completely funded with general fund tax dollars from the city of Boise. which we are one of only, I think, two states left in the country that doesn't have a dedicated funding source for transit, and that's huge. So that's a big priority for us. But then I think we need to keep focusing on the things that we have in terms of retaining amenities like the foothills preservation and our parks and our open spaces, because those are what make people want to live here, whether it's 210,000 people or 340,000 people.
That gets back to the quality of life aspect.
May I add to that? I think the other thing that people want to see are historic districts. And I really do. I believe that what makes a city unique is the fact that you have buildings, historic buildings that reflect the past of that city. And in Boise, of course, unfortunately, we had some changes in the 1970s that did some huge devastation to our downtown area. Of course, today it's quite lovely, and it certainly is a bustling community. But I think that if we want to have people still feel that connectivity to our city, we really need to make sure there are ways we can save our historic buildings and our historic districts, because those are things that people want to come and see. If we want to have more economic value in our community, we want to preserve those buildings so people want to come and see what we have. We have wonderful outdoor facilities that we all love. We have all of those amenities, but we also need to keep those the built environment that speaks to our history as well.
Yeah, we're talking here historic districts, local option tax, better transportation infrastructure. Mm-hmm. What's your take on this?
Well, I thought you said something interesting, because to me it's about community character. That's what you need to preserve. That's really what makes this place unique, whether it's historic districts or whether it's trees or whatever it is. But it's about that community character, I think. That's really what the ultimate point is. I found it interesting. A couple of weeks ago, we had Jeff Speck here, who was talking about walkability, and he made this interesting comment. He said that it was befuddling to him how walkable downtown Boise was, and because it didn't meet the regular standards that you meet everywhere else, but somehow people walk. That's the community character. There is something here that makes people walk, which is not the same as it is everywhere else. There is something unique about it. And so to me, the most important thing is you need to preserve that uniqueness, and we need to figure out what makes this place so unique, what attracts people to this place. And as far as transportation is concerned, obviously public transit is one of the weaknesses. But at the same time, I think it's really not just about public transit. It's about thinking about giving people alternatives. I want to have a choice. I want to make a decision whether I'm going to walk, bike, take transit, or take the bike, or take my car. And I'm used to that. Good transit or a good transportation system means that you have these choices. And sometimes sometimes I just want to drive. Okay? And there's nothing wrong with that. And sometimes I would prefer to take a bus. So I think it's not just about one thing. It's about trying to make sure that people have choices. And it's the same with things like housing. You want to make sure that people have choices. And that's really what the challenge is going to be in the future. So that it doesn't become all the same houses, all the same transportation. It is about the choices and the choices that make this place unique.
Marianne, did you want to add to that?
It's... I agree. I think you're right. And, we can focus on the checklist of things that need to be accomplished now. But when you talked about people walk here in spite of the way that it is, I think that there's a connection to the downtown and adjacent to downtown areas that mm-hmm. when people are living in those environments, part of owning that and part of having that connection is that walking or that biking or, that physical participation in your space. And we do really kind of embrace that. And then the other thing I think going forward that has to always be a priority is our focus on arts and history. It goes back to what Barbara was saying about the things that people come here to see, the things that people embrace. The job that our Arts and History Department has done on the Boise 150 celebration and all of the way that the community has embraced these events has just been unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the few cities in the country that continued to fund arts programs during a recession when that was the first thing to get cut anywhere else. And I think we benefit from that, and I don't ever want to see us lose that lesson because it's really, really important.
Sometimes we look to other cities for ideas or models out there that, we can just try this and see how it goes. And Yop, I'm kind of curious your take on this. Should Boise be looking to models of other cities, or do you lose the community character in the process?
You had to ask that, right?
Like, I did.
I find that we should stop looking at other places. You know, I came from another place. I've been at a lot of other places, and this place has something unique. And I think, you know, instead of looking at what other places have done right, whether it's Seattle or Portland or whatever place it is, it doesn't matter. Let's look at what the strengths are here, and let's build on those strengths. And I think, you know, to me as a planner, I think that Boise State could be an example of a different planning program, and it's nothing to do with Boise State. It has to do with the place. You know, and I think we need to look at what this place is, what makes this place work, what makes this guy say that it's befuddling. It works, guys. It works. You know, it doesn't matter that doesn't have these connections because it's somehow different. So I think we should stop looking at everybody else. I don't care about everywhere else. Yeah, we should pay attention to these things because some people actually have some really good ideas, and we might be able to use them. But let's build from our strengths and what we have and not from what comes from somewhere else.
One of the things that I have found as helpful or more helpful than looking at other places' successes is looking at other places' failures. We have this unique opportunity here to learn from mistakes that have been made in other places and can no longer be corrected, and to get it right the first time. And if we look at where things went wrong, you know, in areas where they completely covered their foothills in homes rather than clustering development, and you essentially wind up with the same amount of development, but you do it properly and leave yourself open space. And so I think there's a lot of us who have come here from other places who've gotten it wrong, and we're really, really committed to not screwing it up here and getting it wrong again.
So we can learn from mistakes of other communities.
Mm-hmm. I think it's that we want to keep Boise, we don't want it to be artificial. And I guess that's what I think about is when you look at other communities, actually historically, interestingly enough, some of those early entrepreneurs did that. They did travel around the West to other communities and look what was happening in those towns, Omaha, you know, Salt Lake. They were already doing that in the 1890s, and yet they came back with some ideas of still what they wanted Boise to be. They called it Boise the Beautiful. Even in 1890, they were talking about, we want to keep it Boise the Beautiful.
I'd really love to encourage any of you to, if you have a question, now's a great time to ask, or if you want to share a story about Boise. Does anyone have a question they want to ask? Because I have tons of questions. I'll keep asking. Yes.
My name is Michelle Cropworth. I'm a native Boisean, and we left Boise in 1966, I think it was, went to the U of I, and then we went to Rochester, New York. Culture shock. It was wet. It was humid. The snow was up to our eyebrows, and the people were unfriendly. Circumstances allowed us to come back in 1986, and we were so glad. But the changes... in Marianne's neck of the woods, when we would come back to visit our folks, sometimes the one-way streets would be going north-south. The next time we came back, the next year, they'd be going south-north. And then there would be either-or, and it was a little confusing even being a native on what's going on. But we finally kind of gotten that right. But I really appreciate the city council and the planning and zoning allowing the neighborhoods to speak up when somebody wants to put a large development that is inappropriate.
Michelle, thank you for sharing your experience with Boise. And you bring up a number of points about neighborhoods and development. I know, Yap, you were nodding your head as she was talking. What do you think about Michelle's story?
Well, it actually, you know, being new and coming here, I remember people how friendly they were and how surprised I was coming from another place. But there's also, I think there's two things that I find really interesting here. The first thing is that there's a pride, and people actually care about the place, which, you know, where I came from, nobody really cared. But then the other thing that I've realized lately is that people take ownership, you know, and I think for a city that is so important that people take ownership of their city. When I'm on the Greenbelt, people have taken ownership of that place. They are doing their own stuff. They have their own way of doing things. But there is a sense of ownership and pride, and I think that makes a tremendous difference in the way that the city feels and the way that city operates.
Barbara, I was thinking, you know, you've done a lot of research on neighborhoods, historic neighborhoods here in Boise. When Michelle's talking about some of these neighborhoods and preserving character, how do those historic neighborhoods shape how the city builds in the future? I mean, we're starting to see homes coming back that have the look of bungalows and that type of style.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to me, especially I think we saw that really occurring in the late 90s with many of the subdivisions that were being developed, Harris Ranch, the area over by me, Bound Crossing, taking on that look of the craftsman-style house. And I think it's something that became a selling point because those neighborhoods were something that folks who lived here might have grown up in those areas and they wanted to have that same feeling again. And also, people, that's what they wanted to have. They wanted to have a little bit more of that sense of community. And I think that you cannot build community. I don't think you can. But I do think that if you're in a town or you live in a city as we do where people have that connectivity, then it does come.
Well, to me, this is interesting, right? Because you think that you can build communities. Now, there's planners that actually think that you can do that, but I think I agree with you. You can build communities. The one thing that you can do, though, is you can destroy them. You know, and I think that's one of the things that you have to realize, that if you do it wrong, it's very easy to destroy that careful balance that you have, so you have to be really careful with that.
Did Boise come close to destroying that character back in the 70s with the demolition?
Well, I wasn't here in the 70s, but looking at the photographs and being a historian, I mean, it felt to me that it was losing some of its identity in the downtown core. I'm looking at Michelle because she grew up here and lived here for many years. The older neighborhoods, I think, probably maintained that historic feeling and that neighborly character. But I do think in the downtown area, I do believe it was lost. In 1989, I was working across the street at the Basque Museum, and of course, Grove Street looked nothing like it does today. The Cub Bar was still on the corner. My volunteers would come to work, and I would have to go and walk them down Grove Street because it had this really bad reputation. That was just 20 years ago. It's really interesting to me to see what has happened today. And I think it did have a rebirth. Definitely downtown, as we all are aware, really did have a... it really did come back from the brink, as we have all known that, have heard about that story. And I think today we're just... It's really interesting to me to see how vital it has become and how we depend on our history for a lot of that, and again, our history and our culture.
This is KBSX 91.5. You're listening to a community conversation in front of an audience about Boise, Idaho's capital city, as it turns 150. We're talking about pride for a city, neighborhoods, the challenges facing the city, and there are some challenges facing the city, and one of those has to do with job growth. And we've reported extensively in the KBSX newsroom about job growth in Idaho. The fact that Idaho has the highest percentage of minimum wage workers in the country, how does Idaho's capital city create jobs that will keep an educated workforce here, grow the economy? Marianne?
Okay, Marianne. Sure. Easy question.
Easy question.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a whole host of issues. I mean, we've got significant problems statewide with the education system, and so that's got to be addressed on a statewide level. But for Boise, I think it's a couple of things. I think that the city itself has a responsibility to build and maintain a great city that businesses will want to not only come to, but that people who start businesses here will want to stay here. And I can tell you that in the course of the past year and a half, as we worked on our non-discrimination ordinance at the city, that was a really important thing for us to accomplish, not only because it's simply the right thing to do, but from an economic development standpoint, we can be checked off a potential list of locations before we even know we are on the potential list of locations, because companies and site selectors follow news and they follow what goes on in communities that they might be considering. And when they see things that show them that their employees may not be valued and welcomed in an equal way, they're going to go someplace where they're going to get that. And so, you know, that's become a really important thing for us and something that we really are focused on pushing statewide, because it's a significant economic issue as well as a significant fairness issue. I also think that the airport remoteness that we talked about a little earlier, that is a problem. It's not an easy place to fly to. We talk a lot in Boise about improving the convention center, building a larger one, having more conventions here. People don't want to go to conventions that they can't get on a plane at home and land where they're going to be. They don't want to change planes two or three times to get there. So, you know, we're working hard on that. that could be a whole other show, the airline industry and how it changes, and they'll be in a city 1 month and they'll leave the city because of a 2% shift and go somewhere else, and it's a very dynamic industry right now. But the chamber and the airport are working really hard to improve the flight situations, and I think that that will be helpful for us as well. So, you know, really it's just to keep building the city we know that not only we are, but we could become, and it'll change.
Well, in today's economy, you can often work remotely, and some people choose quality of life, mm-hmm. and that's more important than being in a major city. And Jaap, I know that you've looked at this as well. It's how does that factor in? Is quality of life enough to attract?
Well, so first a disclaimer, right? I don't know anything about economic development. I'm just a planner, and I'm a planner who's interested in environmental issues. But I think there's some interesting things going on. So first, when I look at Boise, I think there is all the pillars, all the things are here. You got a university, you got a healthcare system, you got a good city government. You got all these kind of components that are sitting there that you can use, that you need for a healthy economy. And then I think the economy is changing. You know, it is no longer that you go somewhere and you need to have transportation, you need to be accessible, you need to have all these things. It is much more based on amenities and quality of life issues. I came here because of quality of life, and then I found out there was all this other kind of stuff. But I think there's more and more people that are able to put a company or work from wherever they want to, and then all of a sudden this becomes a very exciting place to be. And yeah, I think there's a problem with the airport, and I think, you know, I can't get out at 7:30, I think, and at 2:30, and that's it, right? And I think that's an issue. But other than that, I don't think that I don't think there is an issue with that anymore. I think it is easy to attract people here now because of the amenities, because of the quality of life, but you need to start thinking about how to do that. And, you know, those lists are a beginning, that we're on all these lists. And I said, now the best thing is not that we're on a list, it's that we're on all these lists, you know, because there's other people that are on a list, but we're on a whole bunch of them. So there's a whole bunch of different things here. So you have these pillars. And I think we need to start understanding how a CEO thinks. You know, let's not think standard economics anymore. Let's start thinking about how does a CEO make a decision, and what does it take to have that, convince that CEO to have his company in Boise? What is it that he needs? And I think we have everything. We just need to tell people. You didn't tell me, but once you told me, I was here. And I'm not going back to Florida.
The latest driver's license data suggests that more 20-somethings are actually leaving Idaho, and Boise's not immune to that. What does it take to keep young people here?
Well, and I my daughter actually just graduated college, and she was fortunate enough to get a job here in Boise, but I know. I mean, there are no jobs. If you have a college education and there are no jobs, I look around and there are so many talented historians and artists and, you know, engineers and whatever, but the jobs, they're not here, so they do have to leave unless they're willing to, you know, a lot of them are staying and making it on, you know, minimum wage. My daughter has to live at home. She's got a great job in her field, but she doesn't make enough money to live on her own. And so I really do think a lot of it is the fact that there isn't the economic basis you're talking about. I, too, am not an economist, so I can't really speak to it. It's just what I see as a parent. I hope my son will be able to stay here when he gets his degree, but I don't know. Will there be work for him or not?
Hello. My name is Eric Gilbert. I'm actually the festival director for Treefort Music Fest, and this is actually a big reason why that's what I've been working on, is because I think youth engagement, especially in that window post-high school to like mid-30s, is one of the challenges we have here. So, because a lot of them moved to Portland to work in coffee shops because they want to be a part of what's going on there. And so I believe pretty strongly, and I've actually had a bunch of tech startups approach me after the festival being like, this is what we need. We can't attract high-level talent without the kind of culture that they want out of some of these bigger cities. And it's a testament to the city of Boise. They've been really supportive of our festival, Boise 150, and everybody. When I became a musician, from being an electrical engineer, my parents were all a little bummed. But now I'm telling them that. Yeah, but now I'm trying to tell to point out that I have economic relevance. So it's good.
Eric, do you want me to call your mother? Because I'll call your mother.
Please,
okay.
Please.
Well, I think you make a number of important points, and you know, on one hand, musicians are definitely coming here and wanting to start up, but Portland's not that far away. But if you go to Portland, there's already a really rich music scene happening, so maybe the chances of discovery are a little bit less?
That's exactly it. And on the isolation level, I've told this story one too many times, but not to this room, but I was on tour with my band Finn Riggins at one point, and there was a reporter in Michigan that called us on the phone and was asking us what it was like coming from a musical devoid state like Idaho. And, and I explained to them that, there's lots of music there. We just don't have the music business side. We don't have the export side. And that's essentially what I personally am pretty passionate about, is because there's a lot of really creative musicians that want to make this their home base, because that's like myself. I want to live here for all these reasons you guys have been discussing. But it's really hard to essentially do a certain, a vein of really creative music without the opportunity for export.
I'm curious what you tell your friends and musicians who might be contemplating leaving for Portland or a bigger place. What do you tell them to help convince them to stay here in Boise?
I actually think there's a lot of opportunity here for them, especially the more that we develop relationships with those other, because that's a lot of how the music economy works too. It's essentially trade, being able to have a viable product that Portland will take seriously, And so if you can be a Boise musician that can then travel or be able to sell your CDs outside of just our own community, that's what's possible. And so, yeah, that's actually a big part of my passion as well. I always stay here. Nope. We can do this, So,
Thank you for sharing that, Eric. And I want to turn back to our panelists. What do you think about this in terms of creating that environment, keeping that environment that keeps arts and culture and keeps that vibrancy going and grows it? How does the city do that?
Well, I mean, the city is doing it. When you say the city, you're talking about everyone. You're talking about Eric. You're talking about the people that he's working with. Our part, honestly, as a city, is a small part. It's to be accommodating. We can also help put people together. When Eric talks about needing to deepen the business side of the music business here in Boise, we've convened a few things here in town. The Water Cooler, which is a startup that the city supports for local businesses, and we can help to put people with these talents together that might be able to support one another and grow different sides of these kind of businesses. And really, our business growth in Boise is not going to come primarily from other companies coming into Boise. It's going to come from within. We're going to grow here, and it is about keeping people here and retaining that kind of talent. And, we do our best with jobs and with support, but I think we also have to do it in a way that we present a very inclusive and fair and accepting community, because otherwise people are going to go somewhere to find that. People don't want to live where they don't feel like they're wanted and valued.
Yeah.
Well, I have a whole bunch of different thoughts.
I thought you might.
Yeah, and now I'm confused about what I should do. See, I thought it was really interesting when you talk about arts and when you talk about economic development, and people talk about we have this brain drain, all these people are leaving. I'll be honest with you. I grew up in a small rural town. When I was 18, I was out of town, and I had no desire to stay there. I think when you think about where people want to live, different states of your life, you want to live in different places. And when you're in your 20s, there's a lot of people that just don't want to live in a small town and want to go to Seattle and they want to go to Portland and they want to see what it's all about. The question is, do they then come back? And what I've heard in this room and what I see continuously here is that people come back. So I don't think it's that much of a problem. I mean, what would be interesting is to compare you with other cities of the same size and see if you have more of that brain drain or less, and if in those other places people are coming back too. Because I'm not really sure that it's really a problem. And when I think about arts and culture here, come on, we have 200,000 people. Do you see what we have around us and how much stuff there is going on? I can't keep track of it. I go by the park and there was something else that I missed. But it's really true, And now there is a lot of things, yes, the symphony. I'm sure that it's a certain group of people that don't get what I want, but I think it's pretty good. I think we're beating ourselves up way too much, and we compare us with these big cities that we're not. We're ultimately a relatively small town. And for an ultimately small town, we're doing really well.
I do think there was this moment, though, in the history. I've come and gone a lot from Boise, about 3 times, actually. And I always come back, and I always say all roads lead back to Boise. And when I left the second time, it was just before the recession, and things were quiet. And when I returned, there was a different vibe. now it's trying to figure out that there are three or four things even more happening on like a Thursday night. That I don't think was always the case. I might be walking out on a limb here, but I do see a couple people nodding their heads.
There were some good things that came out of the recession. Granted, most of it was bad. But what did come out of it in this community was the opportunity to take some time that we never normally have in the course of a day because there's three or four things going on and everybody's so busy, and to sort of plan for how it's going to be when we come out of this. I know at the city, development slowed down. There weren't a lot of projects going on. So you had time in your day to reflect on this experience. And this is where the history piece comes in. We were all raised by either parents or grandparents who had experienced the Great Depression in some way. We've heard those stories, those life lessons, and never thought we'd see ourselves in that same situation. And suddenly we did. And so our choice was to either learn whatever we could from that to make sure that we could get through it in the best way possible and to learn from it in case, God forbid, it ever happened again, or to impart those lessons now on our kids and our grandkids. And that happened here. And things, we didn't hunker down. Things kept going. They might have gone on a smaller scale. Programs that might have been weekly were monthly, but it kept going. And we hung on to that because we realized the importance of all of it. And so, you know, now thankfully we're seeing things begin to improve, and it's doing it in a way that we had hoped that it would.
I wanted to turn to Terry Shoresman. She's in the audience tonight. She is the director of Boise's Department of Arts and History. And Terry, I hate to put you on the spot, but, you know, in 2008, the city did make a commitment to actually create a Department of Arts and History, which is actually a really rare thing for a city to have, especially starting at as the recession was really starting to heat up. And Terry, you share with me that Boise is, you feel, is kind of like on the cusp of great possibilities. So I would love to hear your take on, after hearing all this discussion, you know, where does all this fit in? Are we on the cusp?
I think we are on the cusp when we talk about that, because our mayor and council did make this huge commitment in 2008 to do something that was, you know, quite innovative, to bring together at a municipal level a former arts commission, meld it with local history, which really nobody does. And people didn't get it. But like, we can make this work because it makes complete sense to us, because we're really all about place. And if we value where we are and we value our arts and our culture, why not bring all of that together and have a municipal government really committed to its local history, which has been so important. And I think getting through the recession and really keeping that commitment, as Marianne said, we kept funding for these organizations and for our grassroots in the way that most communities didn't across the country. Not only did we keep a base level funding, we increased funding through some economic development funds that we had. So that also set us apart. And I think every step along the way, it just created this culture that we really do value. And I know like Marianne and the mayor and others like to say that in this city, we value our arts and our history in the way we do parks, fire, and police. And if we can keep making that commitment again and again, I think it's just going to position us in a completely interesting and unique way going forward, and that's what's really going to make a good 21st century city, because ultimately that's what matters, places where people want to be.
Thank you. Barbara, I saw you nodding your head as Terry was talking. I wanted to give you a chance to chime in.
Well, I am, as a historian, you know, I've, for the last 20 years, we've kept our little business going, you know, a little engine that could chug, chug, chug through the recession, with lots of friends who are in businesses, similar arts businesses or whatever. And we all sort of formed new partnerships when things were kind of tough and people were doing things to help one another out. But what I wanted to get to, actually, is that with the Boise Department of Arts and History, it's a ripple effect. Because the fact that the department exists, it provides opportunities for artists and for historians. And then that also provides opportunities for other folks in the trades who are building exhibits or who are producing music. And so it really is this ripple effect, creating these events that draw not only our own local folks to the city, but people from outside. So it's been this really fantastic thing to see.
But, you know, it's changed more than just arts and history at the city. It's changed all of the other departments as well. When I first came to the city, I was a little bit shocked by the budgeting process, because it basically forced, we have 11 different departments in the city, so don't need to name them all, you know who most of them are. And the budgeting process at the time sort of forced each department to compete with each other department for resources. And, you know, we brought them all together and said, this is the management team of the city, and we're supposed to be working together as a city, not fighting with each other over who's getting what and who's not getting what. And over a period of time, they've come to a process that they really do work with one another and help each other determine priorities. And you know, one department might give up something because another one has a greater need in one given year, and that'll be reciprocated a year later. And it was important to us to have arts and history at that table at that same level. But what's been really fascinating to see is departments in the city like Public Works or Police or Fire, who've never, except for individuals who might be interested in their private lives, never functioned in an historical or an artistic environment. And suddenly they're selecting art pieces for their facilities. And they have embraced this in such a great way. They come to it looking at you like, why are you making me do this? And by the time they get to the end of the process, they're telling everyone they know, I hope you get a chance to be on the next selection panel because it's such a great experience. And you see the departments then begin to pull resources from one another. Police might be plugging troubled kids into art programs. And it's just this really cool ripple effect throughout the city that's almost hard to measure. But you hear the stories and you realize that they're really getting it right.
In the last minute that we have, what's the one thing you'd like to see happen in the next 50 years for Boise? Barbara, let's start with you.
Street railway, light rail, a better transportation system.
And Yap?
I want people to look at Boise and say, that's the way to do it. And we don't look at anybody else anymore, but they look at us for examples.
And Marianne?
Everything on that list, and then we're saying 50 years from now, we're still getting it right, and we're still enjoying the special place that Boise really is.
And that is a great point to end on. I'd like to thank our guests, Yap Voss, Barbara Perry Bauer, and Marianne Jordan, for being with us tonight. Let's give them a round of applause. And this show would not be possible without the amazing team at Boise State Public Radio and our KBSX News team. I'd like to thank our producer for tonight's show, Frankie Barnhill. Our program director, Paul Stribling, Jesse Guyette, and Eric Jones have been engineering our show here in the background. And I'd also like to extend a special thanks to the City of Boise's Department of Arts and History Department for helping us along the way. There are many ways that you can still stay involved with Boise State Public Radio and our news team, including our Facebook page. It's Boise State Public Radio. You can like us on there and follow all of our latest news. We pose questions, lots of ways to engage. You can also follow us on Twitter at KBSX915. And you can also help inform the stories that our news team does by joining what we call our Public Insight Network. You'll find details along with all Idaho news on our website, boisestatepublicradio.org. From all of us here at Boise State Public Radio, I'm Sadie Babbitts, and thanks for being with us.